Hi, this is Lisa Henderson, your host for Daring Parenting on Hoodsprayed FM. So you might wonder, what is a daring parent? Well, if you're willing to be a child's parent, not necessarily their friend, you're a daring parent. A daring parent has good boundaries and sets limits for children, with natural and logical consequences if something goes wrong, and they stick to them. That's what makes you a daring parent. We're on twice a week, Thursday morning from 10 to 10:30, Tuesday evening from 7 to 7:30, and you can listen live on Hoodsprayed FM 96.4 and on hoodsprayedfm.com. If you miss the show and you want to catch it at your convenience, you can go to daringparenting.com, and on the main menu, you'll see a tab that says Radio Shows. If you have any questions that you'd like to address to us, please feel free to email me, lisa@daringparenting.com. My guest today is Jenny Price. She's a senior banking professional. She's got many years of experience in the financial services industry. Jenny's background in psychology and human resources has made her an outstanding executive, a female in a very male-dominated industry. She has worked in South Africa and in the Middle East, and her travels will definitely come into play as we talk to her. But we're happy now that Jenny and her husband have recently settled in Hoodsprayed. So Jenny, you've got this background in various aspects of banking at a very high level. So I would like for you to tell me, what are some of the fundamental lessons that you think parents need to know in regards to their children? And take that from any aspect of your life experience.
I think if I reflect back, probably the thing for me would be that having transitioned through a number of different types of roles in the financial services industry, having gone from HR into line banking into customer experience, I think that whole issue about having one type of career for life doesn't really hold water anymore. I think the ability to kind of, even if you don't really know exactly what you're doing, is sometimes to take a bit of a chance in it, I suppose, would be probably the one thing that I think parents should allow their children to, perhaps if they come from a different generation, to share the fact that it's not just you learn a certain type of skill and you keep doing that for forever and on. I think the other thing is about being a woman and a woman in the world of work. And I think too often we don't allow women to spread their wings. And I mean, that issue about the glass ceiling. And I do think that sometimes it exists. And I think sometimes parents, when their children, when their daughters are younger, they need to give them an ability to not fall in the same role model, the same stereotype, but the ability to actually go out there and I think achieve more than what I often think that parents allow their girl children to feel capable of doing. So those would be the two lessons I think for me were fundamentals.
I love that. So, and these are great overall questions as opposed to just about money.
Mm.
When you see technology from when you started in this business nearly 30 years ago and to where it is now, what do you think has changed? Like the kids today, their lives are so different than what mine was, learning how to open a checking account and writing paper checks, you know. And now I think my kids have their smartphone and they take a picture of a check and it gets deposited.
Sure.
What have you seen change?
It's interesting. There has been a lot of change. I mean, if in essence, everyone now doesn't need to have a bank. I mean, you can just bank on your phone. So the ability to download an app and to be able to transfer money on your mobile phone effectively takes away the need to have bricks and mortar. But what I have seen as well is that as much as that technology has advanced, one would have always expected that branches, for instance, would go away. And there certainly was a movement towards, it was called clicks rather than bricks. And interestingly, the need for a branch actually still today is there. I think there is still something that people kind of feel comfortable about in knowing that there's a physical bank. And perhaps, you know, to the point about what parents with young children, I think, could help them understand is that whilst they're technologically adept at being able to do anything and everything on their digital iPhones and pads and whatever, for them to actually understand that sort of the basics about banking and understand that there is a physical bank, I think is also not a bad thing to take a kid into a branch, let them open an account in the branch, just so that they get the feel of what this is. So it has a physical substance rather than just a digital transience, I suppose.
That's a great idea. My mother was very good. She did that with me, took me in and said, you know, I think I was 15 or 16, said, you need to learn how to do this. Introduced me to the bank president and all the tellers. And yeah. It does give you a feeling of having a sense of connection to your bank. And I think you're right. That's why the banks haven't gone away.
Sure.
Because people want a real person.
Yeah.
Even the technologically savvy ones. Because they can't get that from an app.
Absolutely.
They can't get their questions answered from an app.
Sure.
Do you think that the way that the whole industry and really our whole world is moving technologically, what do you see as some of the positives and maybe some of the negatives?
My psychology background perhaps has highlighted is that the need for social interaction has become so much less. So this, and I don't have children, so, but in listening to parents where children don't interact at a social level anymore, but they'll play Minecraft, for instance, together. So the social interactions and the dynamics around that have changed so much that I do think, and perhaps fear, and I know I'm sounding like an old person now, but that we're unlearning our social skills in a way, which I think is partly why we're unable to sit down and have a sort of a negotiation or a conversation and resolve things face to face. I think kids are becoming very insular because of the way that the technology is moving. But having said that, I mean, clearly technology is the way to go, and there's some amazing innovations out there that, yeah, I think perhaps more on the scientific level rather than the social level.
When you look at, let's say, the way that you were brought up and what you learned about money, and then being in the industry for many, many years, now what you know, what do you wish could have gone differently? Or what you wish your parents had been able to teach you?
You know, I think I grew up with sort of very conservative parents where they both had bank accounts. They taught us the value of money, I think partly because we didn't have a lot of it. So I think it wasn't a case of where whenever we wanted something, we were just given it. I mean, I think we sort of brought up with having pocket money, which was allocated. When I look back though and what I wish I'd learned, it had really to do with understanding how to take care of my financial future. So I always just knew that you had to have some kind of planning for when you get older. And so everyone says, well, you're supposed to save 15% of your salary into a savings account. And we seldom do that. But when you do start to sort of look towards the future, I think that I'd wish I'd understood better about how to create my own wealth. I'd relied on the sort of the tried and tested savings products, perhaps that banks had provided, the traditional retirement annuities that people put into place. What I didn't know was how to perhaps better play the stock market, for instance. I wish at school I'd been able to learn about PE ratios and how to read the market, how to buy some shares when I was actually younger, rather than leaving that till when I almost had become fearful to do it. And then gambling with money was even more of a risk than when you were younger, when you could afford to take a few chances. So I think that's what I wish I'd known. And I think that would be very beneficial for parents either to let their children to try and experiment in that, or for schools to start kind of running a financial curriculum that allows children to understand how to create wealth, both for your immediate needs as well as your long-term, through understanding the share market.
Well, and I think that's such a great point. And there's probably a dozen apps that the kids could figure out and love. Pick a stock that you don't have to pay a lot for and then watch it grow.
Yeah.
That's something that I feel like I was self-employed and my children always saw that work ethic of if it's your own business, it's any time of the day or all the time. But they didn't have a financial education. I did not. I wasn't able to provide them with that.
Yeah.
And now looking back, I think, oh, I really wish I had made it exciting for them to save money. So far, you know, my daughter has that more, but my son doesn't have that feeling of the excitement
And the fun thing, because children are so integrated into sort of the digital world, I mean, trading online for them would be right up their alley. They're also very into immediate gratification almost. So the ability to see the resulting decision that you've made as to how that plays out in the market, I think provides kind of an immediate feedback loop, different to sort of doing a whole course of study, which takes you a year to get to the end and you pass an exam. And okay, so can you really still do the skill set that that course taught you? Whereas trading shares online is very immediate.
I love that idea because it's experiential and the immediate gratification. And if parents are trying to help their children set it up, they don't have to know a whole lot. I'm sure the kids could probably maybe even help the parents figure out how to do something.
It also sort of gets one into the realm of buying birthday gifts a whole lot easier, because perhaps you don't have to buy an actual birthday gift, rather buy your children a set of shares in something. I think it's a legacy that you can actually give your children, which will grow over time financially. It makes it interesting for the child to be participating in the actual growth of those. And I think that that skill set takes them into when they're older as well. So it's a nice gift to give, I think.
One of the big things we hear nowadays is entitlement. And it's usually attached to the millennials. Mm. And my experience has been different. The millennials I know are hard working kids. Mm. Now, I've seen the millennials that have the entitlement stuff. What have you seen in just in your friends and coworkers and colleagues and in your business life of kids with this entitlement attitude? And how would you see to break some of that?
Perhaps maybe to answer in a sort of a more macro way first. So my experience in the Middle East was such that where you have countries that are incredibly wealthy, that take care of their citizens, that sense of entitlement actually becomes a part of the DNA of the general populace. And how that manifests is that they generally don't see the need to work as hard as or put their heart and soul into actually developing a career that's successful. So work kind of becomes a sort of a byline rather than a I have to do this. And so perhaps to bring that into sort of the more immediate sense of, you know, do I see it in children of my friends? And I suppose to some extent one sees it because I think parents, and I need to be careful here because I'm not one, so I need to be careful that I don't criticize, but I do think that parents try and spoil their children much more in today's world than what they did before. And so whatever children want for is almost provided, even sometimes to the detriment of the parent. I think that builds in the child less of a resilience around how do I take care of myself. So I don't think it's that millennials are not hardworking, for instance. It's a sense of, well, if I've been taken care of by my parents so long, well, I guess the world will sort of take care of me as well as I go forward. And as I say, I can only relate that to my experience of living in the Middle East, watching people who are, you know, don't have to want for much, and how they approach life and how they approach their work ethic, which I think misses something.
And it seems to me that the kids that do have parents that do this, and the best advice about parenting I've gotten from people who have no children. So please don't underestimate how powerful your opinions and thoughts and observations are, because it's more subjective. I find that these kids lack a sense of purpose. And that they end up floundering at an age where, you know, in their late 20s, early 30s, they don't know what they want to be. They don't know what they want to be when they grow up.
Sure.
Because, like you said, they haven't had to.
But I think it's also quite difficult today to try and... I often joke that even when I was finished my studies and I was done a couple of years in the world of work, I still didn't know also what I wanted to be. And I think it's possibly harder for children today because I think the world is such a different place. So some of the sort of the skill sets where people would go and study a career, something, those sorts of jobs are now no longer on the market, for instance. So like, you know, things like artificial intelligence now become sort of the in thing to do. So if you haven't studied that, you start to find that you're sort of battling to find a role, which is perhaps why, coming back to, you know, the role of finance and children and their ability to be able to, well, to be entrepreneurs, I suppose. And that's what we don't, I think, teach particularly well at schools. So you go and study either a technicon or at university, and you're then let out into the wide world, and now you've got to try and find your place in that. Well, it's hard to find a job initially. Once you found the job, well, often they want you to have a certain set of years of experience, which don't often come easily unless you can get the job. So I think what we should be doing better initially is training children to be entrepreneurs. And there's a lovely program that I came across, which some of my colleagues have opened franchises with, called Young Entrepreneurs. And it apparently you can run different types of programs on this. So you can teach even kids from sort of like grade one through grade three. There's a sort of an experiential how to learn about money, financial literacy when they're younger. And then I think there's another program for, I think, grades, I think it's 4 through 7 and then 8 and 9. So this, I think, perhaps gives children the confidence of being able to trust themselves in terms of making money. Because I think that's the thing that we all fear so much is either, you know, you've got to go out and make a success of it, and you've got families to support. But if you don't, if you've never tried that, and if you've never tried it experientially when you're young, I think you don't hone that set of skills all that well. So I think it's a super program. Maybe some schools could look to offer it. And I think these franchises are easily sort of set upable. So yeah, it might be a nice to think about.
That's very cool. And I will put a link on the website to that, the Young Entrepreneurs. Yeah. And also to me, it seems the way the world is going, because I grew up in the world of you went to university, you got a good education, you came out, you got a good job, you stayed in that job until you no longer worked.
Yeah.
And that was that. And you hoped you planned well enough that you, as my father used to say, didn't go to the poorhouse.
Sure.
And now I see things, because of that insular thing, kids really can do 4 careers in a lifetime.
Mm.
And it's also much more, everything's more nimble. And I think their thought of working for the same company for many, many years is just,
it's anathema.
It's just not happening. So these kids are really ripe for entrepreneurship.
Sure.
And do you see the world moving that way?
I think
less away from corporate and more to independent and contractors and consultants.
I think more and more people offer their skills as a consultant in a range of different geographies, in a range of different markets. Because I think it's about being able to apply a set of thinking skills, less a set of actually trained sort of, so yes, if you're a farmer, you need to understand when you're going to sow seeds, but you're able to apply your intellect to many different types of industries. And I think that more and more, the type of university education is exactly that. It just teaches people to think. And so, I think it does allow the flexibility. And because the world is but a global village now, it's much easier to take that skill set and make it transportable into different countries, different locations. And there's definitely, you know, the skill set in India, for instance, where they're desperate for IT people, and whereas in other markets, sort of IT jobs are fairly difficult to come by. So I think that your ability to travel the world with your bag of skills in it is so much easier today than it used to be.
And this whole global world thing, that has shifted so much, my guess is, from when you first started in this industry until now, where we are all intertwined.
Yeah.
What do you see, and you've lived in different countries, what are the similarities that you see with all the countries, with families, children, parents?
Mm.
And then I'd love to know what some of the dissimilarities are and where we could actually pull and learn from.
The similarities, I suppose, I think what struck me most with moving to different countries, just from sort of a parent's point of view, is that everyone's desperate to make sure that they still get the right education for their children. So no matter which country you're in, it's a real stress point for parents to make sure that the education, or that their children's education, is not suffering. In terms of the similarities I see sort of in the world of work, you know, you have in different countries, you have the same set of corporate structure that you do in every country. They literally are sort of cookie cutters of each other. I think the challenges that are becoming more prevalent relates to working in more multicultural environments. So in South Africa, many of your colleagues are South Africans and you understand each other much more easily. You sort of all speak the same language. You come from the same sort of backgrounds. Looking at companies overseas, they tend to employ people from many different parts of the world. And so you could find yourself in meetings with folk from Greece and some folk from India and a range of others in between. And it's quite interesting to understand not just achieving what is the end goal of work and what you're there to try and deliver, but also in getting delivery from people whose frame of reference is different. And so you almost need to learn a social set of skills in order to get things out of people in addition to achieving the work goal. And I think that's why perhaps I think children in those sorts of environments actually come out having also gone to schools with many different nationalities, and they're much more worldly. I think there was a term that they coined about third culture kids. So they are the sort of, they have their home culture, and that's assuming both parents are from the same country, but then they develop a sort of a third culture from the melting pot of the children and the adults that they interact with, which I think makes them perhaps more socially adept than maybe their counterparts who stayed in one country all the time.
Yes, our world is fast becoming a small world. And we'll continue talking to Jenny Price, banking professional, about children, globalization, and world travel in just a moment on Daring Parenting.